Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
All right, good morning. This is Amuse News. I'm your host, RJB. We are back. I am your tour guide, your host, your chaperone. And speaking of chaperoning, I chaperoned a bus full of first graders to the zoo yesterday. And I would rather be chaperoning you all through this adventure because that was something else. Anyway, we have a really fun guest today. We have Brandon Hoy, who is one of the guys who actually was starting Roberta's back 15 years ago. And I've talked to him about that before. We'll chat a little bit about that, but he also has many Roberta's locations as well as some other restaurants, including two that showed up this year on the top 100, best 100 list from the New York Times. So it'll be a really fun conversation. Feel free to put questions in the comments and let us know, if you have questions, all that. I mentioned before, we're celebrating our 15th year as an organization, and part of the reason I started this show is HRN started like this as a food radio station. It started at Roberta's, pretty close to where Brandon will be sitting. So we're going to talk to him a little bit about that. But if you're listening, please subscribe to the podcast and share with your friends and all that. Okay, so first I wanted to get into a little bit of food news as usual. I read an article this week in Food & Wine about kind of the small format grocery store. It's pretty interesting. Whole Foods several years ago rolled out a smaller size store, something like more along the lines of a New York City bodega, and that, you know, you can go to for household stuff and food and all that. And then the pandemic struck, prompting Whole Foods to focus on its bigger locations. And now post pandemic, with real estate changing and square footage costs and all that, they're going back to this. So they're putting out these stores that are 7,000 to 14,000 square feet, which seems like a lot, but a normal store is like 40,000. So their goal is to kind of make this urban shopping experience more tailored and more customized. It's interesting as things go back to post-pandemic, everything's changing a little bit in terms of the size and the scope and what people are offering. So just something I was keeping an eye on. Okay, another article I saw, which I really appreciated, was this idea of non-alcoholic drinks and the market for those increasing and carding people. So right now, Target, Walmart, a bunch of other places are putting in kind of permanent real estate for non-alcoholic drinks, which I think is great. I love NA beer. I drink it quite a lot. I actually had a really good one at Roberta's a couple weeks ago, and I've been drinking less regular beer. I still drink regular beer, but a lot less. And it's interesting because their Target is one of the stores that's carding for non-alcoholic beverages. And part of that is that it's in the interest probably of all of us to not have kids, you know, buying six packs of non-alcoholic beer and you know, all that. But also I think for the brands, it's better because they know that 90% of their customers are alcohol drinkers seeking moderation. That's what Gia founder Melanie Masarin said. And a bunch of these brands, they want their products to be with the other alcohol because it is, you know, for people who are drinking but drinking less or stopping drinking. And I just think it's interesting. It's a really quickly changing space. I think, you know, NA beer for sure is in such a different place than it was a couple of years ago. And same with non-alcoholic wine and cocktails. I heard also another article that I read a few weeks ago is that Athletic, the non-alcoholic beer brand, was the most sold in Whole Foods. Part of that, I think, is that Whole Foods has a lot of local and regional beer, so probably not a lot of national brands driving a lot of sales in Whole Foods. But the fact that Athletic was the top selling brand of beer as a non-alcoholic beer is really, really surprising. I just think it's really fascinating to see where this space goes. Okay, so if you're a if you're a food person, you might have followed the chili crunch controversy. This article in The Guardian, which all these stories I'll link to in the show notes for the episode. There's a cease and desist kind of thing going on here that Momofuku is sending out. According to this article, the brand is sending cease and desist letters to companies using the terms chili crunch with an I and chili crunch with an E, and is hoping to successfully trademark the former term, the C-H-I-L-I crunch. Momofuku said, when we created our product, we wanted a name we could own and intentionally picked chili crunch to differentiate it from the broader chili crisp category. In 2020, Momofuku started selling jars of chili crunch. If you don't know, it's a spicy condiment. It's amazing. It's really delicious. There's also chili crisp, chili oil, crunchy chili sauce, lots of others. But there are now tons of brands, including a lot of small businesses that are selling, you know, chili crunch. And David Chang's company, Momofuku, is trying to trademark chili crunch. It doesn't own it yet, but they're sending these letters out. And in this article, a bunch of, you know, owners of small businesses are up in arms, of course, and saying things like this kind of action sets a dangerous precedent for the squashing of competition, not to mention how ridiculous it is to try and take ownership of a generic cultural term. And I think it's pretty interesting. One CEO said this is not a zero-sum game. There's enough space for everyone. But, you know, David Chang, obviously a big celebrity in the food world and a big fixture in especially Asian and Asian American food, kind of going and trying to shut people down for using the term chili crunch. So I don't know. Let me know what you think about that. We'll keep following this story. And one episode I want to tell you about from HRN, one of our most popular podcasts, Taste of the Past, with Linda Palacio, has a new episode about the gastronomic journey of Peru. Really interesting. If you don't know anything about Peru, you might learn something from this episode. One of the most diverse cuisines in the world. There's a lot of different areas and a lot of different kinds of Peruvian food. And I think it's making its way toward the U.S. But here, Linda talks to Robert Bradley, the author of Eating Peru, talking about the history of Peruvian cuisine and how it's come to the U.S. And Taste of the Past is always a really interesting show and interesting conversation. So thanks, Linda, for that. Okay, I'm going to bring our guest, Brandon Hoya, in just a minute. I wanted to tell you, I've been mentioning our 15th anniversary tour. We have something special that we want to share. We are partnering with Charity Buzz to offer something that's a little bit different than the campaign that's going on, which is that if you bid on this, you can win two VIP tickets to the Brooklyn Bowl on May 10th in Nashville to check out Maggie Rose. She's an amazing singer, just released a new album called No One Gets Out Alive. These are VIP tickets. They come with a meet and greet, backstage tour, you know, time talking to Maggie. She's an amazing artist, an amazing person. Plus two nights in a hotel, the Russell Hotel in downtown Nashville, plus dinner for two at Nashville's Blue Aster restaurant. This is a full experience. It's an auction. And of course, this all raises money for HRN and the education programs we do. So I'll put a link in the show notes to this. But if you go to Charity Buzz and search for Heritage Radio Network, you'll see that. It's going to be about, the auction's going to be about 10 or 12 days. It'll end on April 23rd, I think. But this is a specific thing. You stay two nights in Nashville, you go to this awesome show, you meet Maggie, and you go to an awesome dinner, and you support HRN. Win, win, win all around. Okay, let's bring on our guest, Brandon. Hey, Brandon.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining.
Thank you. I'm glad that I'm also not chaperoning in a bus full of little children right now.
Oh my God.
It's in my future as well, very soon.
It is. I got to say, man, the bus is the killer. So, you know, if you can get around the bus ride, I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, like I'll drive myself and a few kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Much easier.
So I can tell by where you're sitting that you're in the Tiki Bar at Roberta's in Bushwick. I guess that maybe that wall behind you or the wall across from you is the back wall of our studio.
Could you tell by the Sasquatch?
Yeah, exactly.
Lurking over my shoulder.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so HRN, I've said this on this show, and we've talked about this before, but started there where you are right now. around the same time that you started Roberto's, but it's been a long time. And I know that you were there at the beginning, and we're, you know, since I took over here, we've been trying to kind of bring some of that spirit back while still, you know, trying new things. And, I guess I just wanted to ask you quickly, what's your brief, history of HRN from your perspective, given that you've been there for so long?
Right. Well, so Roberta's is turning 17 this year, HRN 15, right? So very shortly after we opened Roberta's, we opened HRN. Actually, directly behind me, this wall is the back of the radio station, which is located in the back of Roberta's in two evergreen shipping containers. And probably one of the most memorable days of my life was dropping those two shipping containers back here and the work that it took to turn it into a radio station over like pretty much a whole summer. I remember it very clearly. It was the Summer Olympics were happening. And I had set up a TV inside of the container to watch the Olympics. I had all that was in there at this point was a hammock and a TV where I could watch the Olympics. And we were pretty much just building. A lot of this was cutting the metal out and welding and framing for the giant windows, cutting the two apart so we could combine them into like the L form that they're in. So a lot of it was just like cutting and welding and cutting and welding. And it was just me and one other guy in here, and my breaks were in the hammock watching the Summer Olympics. That's what I would do. That with a, you know, some sort of alcoholic beer.
That's amazing. So we come a long way. And by the way, I did say I had a delicious NAIPA at Roberta's a couple of weeks ago. It was new. I hadn't seen it before, but I know you always keep a few on your menu there.
Yeah. I mean, hey, there's a real desire for people to find alternative choices to drinking these days. And I think, you know, trying to find interesting ways to kind of service that demand is always fun. It's another place to be creative, to be honest with you. NA Bev has always kind of been somewhat of a afterthought, I think, for most restaurateurs. And I think like having this new world is exciting. It's like another place where you get to be creative. So I think it's probably been challenging for a lot of people who've made their bones kind of in selling spirits and beer and wine. And it is difficult because it was such a drastic turn. It really, you know, it like drinking really slowed down heavily after COVID. But it's nice to know that there's like a new kind of space to be creative and to find interesting ways to like deliver people a new experience. And it's been fun for us. It's funny because we always have like kind of an array of NA beers, and we have for a while. But as you were talking, I was just thinking, I was like, oh man, we should do a NA Michelada this summer, which would be like really fun because it's like an opportunity to feel like you're having a crafted drink, you know, while still not getting hammered.
Yeah. 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 It makes sense. Yeah. It's really cool. I appreciate you that you do that. And you know, it's come such a long way. And I feel like now it's not just like a, you know, kind of an afterthought. It's like something that people are putting thought into, which is cool.
Yeah. Cause it gets tiring, right? Like if you're a person who doesn't drink, you know, most restaurants, you're kind of getting stuck with the traditional sodas, iced tea, lemonade. Yep. If you're real crafty, you get to make Arnold Palmer, you know? And it's like, I have to imagine that it kind of gets boring. Like you would like to try some other things. And I think like thinking about NA in the same way that we think about wine or beer by like pairing flavors that we feel like go well together, it's fun. I again, it just gives everyone like kind of another opportunity to try to do things that are cool.
Yeah. So Brendan, I wanted to talk to you about the best 100 restaurants in New York City, list came out, I think last week, a week and a half ago, and your, you know, two restaurants that you're involved with are in the top the top 100, Foulwich, which is, I think, in the both new also to both this new, year's yeah. list. Foulwich, which is an Italian inspired spot right in the East Village, which is like, I think, ranked 53. And then Blanca, which is a tasting menu number two, at number two on the charts. I think it's fascinating. Like, I've spent a lot of time at Roberta's and I haven't been to Foulwich yet, but I want to. But I think, like, how do you approach creating something like Blanca, which I know was open before and kind of reopened, but also kind of revamped. But I don't know. It's just interesting because it's part of the Roberta's complex, but Roberta's is this very specific thing that you guys do so well. And then you do this completely different thing, but I think probably brings some of the same qualities and perspectives to it while keeping it fresh. How do you approach like creating something like a tasting room restaurant when most of your history has been like making amazing pizza and things that go with the pizza?
Well, I think in the early days it was pretty easy. Reimagining it and redoing it was actually almost harder than doing it originally. Mm-hmm. Originally, you know, my partner Carlo is an amazing chef. We were always putting out really high-end food outside of pizza in Roberta's. And Blanca started by literally we had one table inside that we were booking once a week for 2 to 4 people. And we were doing a tasting menu inside of Roberta's. So the birth of Blanca actually happened in Roberta's. And the demand for that seat, that table was so high that we were like, hey, this is like a real thing. And we wanted to do something that was very small. We wanted to have a lot of control over the what kind of food we were doing. And we didn't want to open like a 40 seat restaurant. We really wanted it to be a very like special experience. And there was this idea of trying to make cooking theater, right? So it was a very theatrical kind of experience that we were trying to give to people at a very high level. And in the early days, man, it was a real marathon. We were doing like 21 courses of small bites, also paired with wine, like almost every, like 19, sometimes, you know, between 12 and 19 wine pairings with it. Wow. So it was really an enduring eating experience. And I think in the early days, you know, the people that were attracted to it are really, quite honestly, still our clientele. There's still a lot of the same people. I think there are people that see eating food in a different way. I think for them, it's like being able to run a marathon. It's like being able to endure any kind of like physical, like climb a mountain. So there's something about the experience, the length of it and how much it is that I think on top of how good the food is and kind of the theatrical aspect that's happening, I think there's something to be said about the like enduring aspect of getting through the thing. And I think it releases endorphins in a way that's like, it kind of is, it's invigorating. And I think once we knew what we wanted out of that experience, it was pretty easy. All we did was get better over the years. Now, reopening it and reimagining it has been, I would say it's been harder because we really knew what we wanted out of it very early on. And this one, you know, we have a new chef, Victoria, and she is incredibly talented. And now it's like trying to get like all of Carlo's ideas and all of our ideas all into like one place. And trying to kind of envision that experience as a whole. And I'll tell you, in the early days, it was very difficult. I think a lot of this is muscle memory. The more reps you get of the service of the thing, the better you get. So really, it was really quite impressive to get number two after 9 weeks, where like, you know, it took us years the first time really to kind of get to a place where we all felt like it was worthy of what we wanted it to be. You know, it took us a really long time. So I don't know if I really answered the question fully. I think it's still a work in progress. I think is really, yeah. I think there's still tons of room for improvement. I mean, we're incredibly like appreciative of being number two, but I think that we have so much room to grow. I think that restaurant can be so much better than it is currently. And I think everybody who's in there every day thinks it can. So I'm excited to see, you know, what it looks like in a year and hopefully like it continues to blow people's minds.
That's really cool. I've eaten at Roberta's a bunch of times, and last time I was in there 2 weeks ago, I was realizing that, you know, I love the pizza, of course, and the little gem salad, which I've talked about on this show a couple times, is like one of my favorite things. But I'm also realizing that it is more than a pizza restaurant. You know, like those side dishes are like, they're really like every detail is covered. You can taste like five or six different things. You know, they're really balanced. They're really like a lot of attention is paid to those. So you can, if you look closely, you can see how that thread kind of continues and could go into a place like Blanca.
Well, you know, we're like craftspeople at heart. So it's all about executing at a high level and really like being able to be creative. So, you know, we make all the mozzarella in house for the pizza, which then in turn means we make all the stracciatella for like the stracciatella that we serve. But we're making like 7-8 different shapes of pasta in house. You know, we're making like stuffed pastas here for Blanca, for Foul Witch. So, you know, we really put in all of the work and, you know, we're not like just buying stuff off the back of a Cisco truck and selling it. I mean, everything that we do here is intentional. And we are, you know, we're very proud of the fact that we can do a lot of these things ourselves. You know, we're not outsourcing a lot of stuff here. A lot of these things we're making in-house.
So the one thing I want to mention about Blanca, not you know, that this is the most important thing, but there's also a record player and allows people to listen to music. And the way I understand it, you can kind of choose what you want to listen to among the catalog while you're in there.
Yeah. I mean, it's always kind of been one of the greatest parts. I mean, that came to be because we were always trying to make the restaurant feel very comfortable. And we were trying to find a hospitable way of like loosening this up so that it didn't feel, I don't want to say pretentious. I don't think that's really the right word. We just really didn't want it to feel stuffy in there. Mm-hmm. And we mm-hmm. wanted it to feel like an experience, like you were in somebody's house who was really taking care of you and a nice house and that you are allowed to be free. And by allowing people to kind of get up and play records, we felt like it could, you know, break up some of the kind of the length, the enduring aspect of like, you could get up and walk around, play a record, you know, hopefully the, you know, you sit at a counter, so it's very linear. So it's a little bit hard to have a conversation with somebody who's not in your immediate group. So we always did kind of encourage people to kind of like get up and yander around because we want these people to like meet each other and know who else is in the room. There's only 12 of them and it's a very intimate experience. So the idea with the record player was to kind of like another place to like really just bring people together. It's the water cooler of the room.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. And that's a great way to think about it. What about Foul Witch?
53. I mean, we were very happy to like have two restaurants in the list. I mean, we're incredibly proud of that restaurant. We're just a little bit over a year there. I think right now that restaurant's better than it's ever been. Better than, you know, when we were reviewed by Pete Wells initially. I mean, I think every month that restaurant, we just keep getting better and better. And it goes to what I was saying earlier, where it's kind of all about reps and mm-hmm, you're getting mm-hmm. the repetition of like both on the service side and the kitchen side. It's like when you're cooking these things like over and over again, you're just like starting to get like they're getting so good at the execution of this stuff. And on the front of house side, they're getting like they're like becoming really amazing at like ushering people kind of like through the experience. And, you know, I ate there a few weeks ago and it was the best of all of the times that I'd eaten there. And it's always really nice to see that progression of like really constantly improving. And it's hard in a restaurant because it's easy to become kind of complacent and say, this restaurant's really good. Just like, let's maintain this level. And I think that that's probably a very normal way to operate, but in there, everyone's motivation is to constantly be better. And they're constantly trying to push that edge. And I love that restaurant. It's fantastic.
That's so great. Well, congrats. And I need to get there. I need to get to both of them at some point soon. How do you do quality control kind of like across all these different, cause you also have many, Roberto's and like new ones opening, and like, how do you approach that? Because I assume that you probably want to be hands-on with everything, but it's hard given, you know, the scope.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the long run, you have to really start trusting the leaders. And I think, you know, for the most part, we try to put, you know, people in charge of the kitchens who we have faith in and that we trust with that. I think, you know, we've always looked at the restaurants. I think I said this to you last time we were talking. We kind of always look at the restaurants like children, right? Like, they all come from Carlo and I's DNA, right? But they're all slightly different. So I think from our aspect, what is the pizza slightly different? Maybe from place to place, it is a little bit. And I think there's a number of factors that go into that. You know, we're opening in Denver right now. The just altitude changes the way that the dough reacts. Right. So for us, every place that we have, we're trying to make the best thing we possibly can that represents like what we do. I personally think the pizzas that they make in Culver City are like some of the best. And you do like for us, we do notice like the slight differences between the two. And I think from a quality control perspective, we're not looking for everything to be exactly the same. We're looking for everything to be exceptional. And I think that's where you start like enlisting people that you trust to put out high quality food. And I think as long as it's not like unrecognizable as our style, like I believe it's okay to have some kind of differential between each restaurant.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. I got to ask you, as I ask all of our guests, what was your last best bite or last best meal?
Ooh, my last best bite. I haven't eaten out for some time, so it's probably been at home. Not true. Okay, we did a pop-up recently called Ezio's at our Domino Park location, and we did like a traditional kind of steakhouse pop-up. And though the steaks were terrific, it was not my best bite. The best bite was we did this hash brown, which was shaved potatoes, like layered, pretty much stacked like a casserole, and then like cut into cubes, and then like pan fried. And it was nice. The most fantastic thing I've had. Now that I've brought it back into my memory, I'm going to have a crackhead moment of fiendish want.
You want to go back?
Yes.
That's awesome. That's great. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for doing this and congrats on these. I mean, it's really awesome and I appreciate all your support of HRN and also just congrats on all the growth and all the success. It's really great to see.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
All right. So we are going to be back tomorrow with another episode, but if you like what you're here, if you're listening as a podcast, you know, follow us and review us. And if you're watching, thanks for tuning in and we'll see you tomorrow at 10:30. Thanks, Brendan.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.